When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Perfect.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a big episode, One for One. I'm your host, Nolan Schumann, joined as always by my co-host, Miles Fuchs. Miles, it is Friday night, April 19th. It is 'twas the night before the playoffs, and all the children were sleeping. Not Miles and Nolan, though. They are recording a podcast. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you, my lord. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to stand before you and jest and make predictions.
You've seen that, like, Friday Beers, like, cringe guy, or...
Yeah,
fringe guy clip.
Yeah, sure have.
That's like a big joke that I've been trying to get going. So I'm really glad that we got an opportunity to throw that out. I'm good. Friday night, bow chicka wow. You have a tea and a Bud Light, and like not a twisted tea, like that's a coffee, because you have a coffee and a BL.
Yeah.
Well, son of a biscuit. If it's a Friday, a guy might as well, right?
Yeah. Go grab it. Go grab it now.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You go ahead. You know what? I'm not even gonna cut this part of the show out, guys. I'm gonna just tell you what's been on my mind. Listen, we need to talk about the GDP. I know absolutely nothing. What else can I tell you? I've been painting. Painting has been fun. Painting a master bedroom. It's not great. It's not very fun. But you know, we're making it work. We're doing our best, and much like the country at heart, we will survive another day.
Were you spewing nonsense when I went to the fridge to grab not one, but two Diet Millers?
Oh, well, if you're going to do that.
Oh, it's a Friday night. The playoffs are starting this weekend. The weather's nice. Why not have some fun with your friends? Because that's what hockey's for. It's for getting together with the boys and girls that bring you happiness. You know, your family,
Miles,
your friends.
My favorite picture of LeBron James is when he's got the Finals MVP and the trophy, and he's like this.
Is that gonna be you with Bud Lights? It is, because he's got two Bud Lights. So yeah, things are gonna get hairy. Clearly, a couple BLs, no supper. This is boy dinner.
Fresh crack.
It's been a while since we've done this on One for One. Are you ready?
Yeah. Okay, on go. So we'll go 3, 2, 1, go, and then we'll... Okay. Yeah, okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, it stink.
Couple of slips.
Call me... I don't know what the guys' names are, but I'm call us two guys in NSYNC. Two of the guys
Joey Fatone and Justin Timberlake.
Oh, I'm so shaving a goatee.
Frosted tips.
Frosted tips 2024. If the Oilers win the cup, we'll both get frosted tips.
Dude, if the Oilers make the cup final, I'm frosted tips.
I'm just looking for a reason to get frosted tips. Welcome back to One for One, playoff preview episode 21, season 4. We're jacked up, clearly. And my only regret is that, you know, you might be listening to this at work on Monday. Maybe you're throwing this on, doing some housework Saturday. My only regret is that you're not able to have this with us while having a beer. But you control that destiny, and you can have a beer whenever you want. Don't True. Let corporate America tell you that you can't drink at work.
says to the city dump truck driver.
Says to the heavy equipment operator. All right, here we go. That's a good intro. That was not where we were going to go with the intro, but I'm happy that we took it another way and made it fun. So would you mind if I ran through the agenda for the episode and got everybody ready to rock?
You know, Miles, I don't think I would.
Why I'd mind. So after some positive feedback from last episode, we decided to switch up the way that we do the recap. We're going to keep the good, the bad, and the ugly going one more time here just to wrap up last few games of the Oilers' regular season. Once we get through that, good amount of Oilers shit. We're going to talk about playoff lines, the way guys are looking coming up on the team, what we're thinking for playoffs. We're going to do kind of a through the window UFA look at what guys are expiring contracts, who might have played their last game for the Oilers, was playoffs are firing up, just talking about some guys there. Once we get through that, we're going to look at one coach, Knobloch, and see how the Oilers did in his tenure as coach. And once we get through that, we will move into some quick NHL discussion, talk about the Yotes again, talk about some player retirements, and talk about some individual award winners. And once we get those logistics out of the way, the bulk of the episode will be spent doing an in-depth playoff preview. We're going to give you the matchup, season series, how those teams did during the year and the course of the 82 games. We're going to tell you our game breaker, the player that both of us think is integral in each team winning that series. Give you our prediction for the series for all of the upcoming matchups that we have. Looking forward to it. So if you haven't made a bracket yet, if you haven't picked your players for your playoff pool, this is a great episode to get some feedback for how we think it's going to go and maybe some guys that you should be keeping an eye on. With that out of the way, let's talk about something good. You want to talk about some good stuff?
Of course. Do you want to take the first point or would you like me to take the first point? You tell me.
You know, I'll go ahead here. Okay, I'm feeling it. Miller Lights are working. No free ads. The good. April 17th, the Oilers were part of history as the NHL closed this chapter of hockey in Arizona. The Oilers played the Coyotes in the final game at the 5,000 capacity on ASU campus Mullett Arena. As someone who got to watch an NHL game at this arena, it's a really unique experience. Holds a lot of cool memories, giving fans a unique way to watch NHL hockey up close and personal. And again, I went there for one of my best friend's bachelor parties and we watched Yotes and Flames. So not two teams that I, cheer for or root for or anything like that, but just a great memory. And for that reason, I'm putting this game in the good category.
Bunch of dogs watching the dogs.
Although it's probably more of a bad because the Oilers lost 5-2. With second place wrapped up in the Pacific, I mean, who gives a shit? Take it for what it's worth and enjoy the moment. I do feel bad for all the regular people, like the employees, the fans, the arena workers, who like very abruptly won't have their jobs or a team to cheer for next year because some greedy millionaire fucked up owning a professional sports team in America's sixth largest urban area. Also, Fogle hit 20 on the year, contract merchant. Not much that I really have to say about this game because I was at a RM ratepayer supper, not watching the game, but conducting business as I am a businessman who cares about business and profits and and networks and connections.
Did I tell you that recently I got Taylor into watching The Godfather? She was like getting like really into watching like critically acclaimed movies, and so she wanted to watch like arguably the most critically acclaimed movie. And so I got her to watch the first and second Godfather, and she's now to the point where she's like obsessed with them. And so today she was finishing up Godfather Part 2 and she's like texting me lines that like Hyman Roth is saying to Michael Corleone. He's like, it had nothing to do with business. And this was the business we've chosen.
She's making pasta on like sauce on the stove and a wife beater and a gold chain.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Eating cannolis, full Italian.
It's so sick, man. It honestly rules. Yeah, but I mean you nailed it on the head. It was cool to kind of see history. I always like, whether it's good or bad history, I always do like seeing shit like that in the NHL when it happens. I mean, we'll get to the Coyotes at some point, but it's, what can you do? Fogle hitting 20 on the year is extremely funny. And I actually wanted to quickly, I saw this today and I was like, oh, Miles will find this really funny. So I was wondering why Warren Fogel has scored 20 goals this season and why he was on such a heater compared to like previous seasons. And so obviously, what do you think I looked at first, Miles? His shooting percentage. That's right.
I was okay.
Okay, I'll just answer my own fucking question.
Go for it.
So his shooting percentage this season was actually 10, and his career average is 10. So it had nothing to do with his shooting percentage. But when I take a look at the shot count, Miles, if you go back to his last season in Carolina, he had 91 shots on net. And then these next three seasons in Edmonton, 142, 126. Oh, this year? Oh, what's that number? Oh, that's right, 201.
So he's chucking rubber on net.
Kid fucking absolutely railed the pill against the goalie's pads. So
what I was gonna guess was offensive zone starts.
Oh, that probably is it too. Yeah, I haven't even taken a look at that. That's a good idea, Miles.
You know, sometimes I'm just a co-pilot for stats, but sometimes, you know, the co-pilot's gotta land the plane too. You know,
I'm actually gonna take a look at that while we're actually going in this show today. Speaking of which, next good. April 15th, the Oilers demolished the Sharks 9-2 in Edmonton. I had a good tweet on the 1-for-1 account. Follow us on Twitter. What was the tweet at? What did I say again?
It was like when the Sharks guy scored to make it 9-2.
Oh, yeah.
You tweeted that picture of like Chris Paul hits a deep three to cut the deficit to 42. Funny. Good tweet. I think you got like 30 likes on it. That's a banger.
Appreciate that.
And just a good poll because sports people love more sports.
Yeah, of course they do. And sports.
And light beer.
Yeah.
And backwards hats.
And coffees at 9:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Connor, back in the lineup, finally got his 100th assist on the year. Good for you, Connor. Congratulations. That puts him with one of what should have been one of four NHL players or one of no. Yeah, one
Just
of four
NHL line.
Players to do it. But at this time, he was the fourth NHL player in history to do it. And we say that because Nikita Kucherov did it a few nights later. God damn it. But still crazy. McDavid, Fogel, Holloway, Henrik, Perry, CeCe, Boosh. We're so fucked. And the children's author also had goals. Good night for the home side. Miles turned it off when it was 5-1 because that was enough for him. Fun fact, when the Sharks pulled Devin Cooley for Georgi Romanov, Miles did a little bit of research. He is from Yekaterinburg.
Yekaterinburg, city in Russia. And that name jumped out to me right away when I saw it because that is the city when the Russians, during the revolution, when the Bolsheviks exiled the last Russian czar, that's the city that they exiled him in and then ultimately murdered him and his entire family there. So some fun history that a goaltender from Yekaterinburg is playing in the show. I don't know. One thing about me, I love the Roman, or not the Roman Revolution, the Russian Revolution. I think it's really interesting. It's really funny. And the second that I saw he was from Yekaterinburg, I was like, let's go. And I think that maybe like one or two people that listen to the show are going to be jacked up about that. And everybody else is just going to get away with a fun fact. So either way, fun facts and hockey is what you can expect at the headquarters of 1-for-1.
So instead of Darren from Zener, it's like Adam in like... Ottawa is like slamming a steering wheel, like, let's go, boys.
I love a little history in my hockey pod. I think that one's mostly for NYR Nick. I'm gonna be curious to see if he shoots a message and he's like, that was a good pull, Miles. Good job, buddy.
Shout out to the champ. God damn it.
Shout out to the champ of the Secret Society. Kid was unbelievable this year.
Yeah, and I absolutely gifted him his championship. Quite possibly
speaking
the worst
of the
trade
bad.
I've ever made.
speaking of the bad, bad trade, bad move.
On April 13th, the Oilers faced off against the Canucks for a chance at the Pacific Division. Good opportunity as well to right the sins of early part of the season where Vancouver whacked the Oilers three times. But no McDavid and no Demko in this one. Oilers lost 3-1 and gave up any chance they had at taking the Pacific Division. Not a great look for the Oilers, and kind of deflating in the way of getting momentum back against a team that seemed to have their number all year. Evander Kane, however, got the lone Oilers goal. I think Evander Kane has actually looked not bad in the last little while, so good on him. Skinner stopped 24 of 26. Miles didn't watch, but I certainly did. And unfortunately, I fell asleep at the beginning of the third period, so I couldn't watch the end of it. You know what, man? It's the end of season. I think I'm allowed a little bit of rest once in a while.
Oh, dude, 100%. And I wanted to use this kind of as a selfish way to talk about something kind of cool. That the reason why I wasn't watching the game is because I was supporting a small community in their efforts to build a child care center. We were at the Bethune Sports Gala for a work fun event kind of thing. Really cool to get out there. They had tons of support. That's a great community. Bethune's awesome little town. If you've never been, it's worth going to a hockey game there, just, you know, hanging out, getting an ice cream, whatever. But they, at their sports gala, their keynote speaker was Mr. Daryl Sittler.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yes. So it was really cool to see him. And actually, quick funny story. So we get there early. We're sitting at the table. I went with, you know, a few people, and friend of the show, Janelle, joined me. And we were sitting at the table, and like, not to be a dick, but like, I don't know what Daryl Sittler looks like as a 75-year-old man. Like,
yeah,
you know, I know what Daryl Sittler looked like when he was potting bingos, but I don't know what he looks like as a 75-year-old man. So it's an older crowd. We're sitting at the table, and this guy's like looking at me, and he's smiling, and he walks up and he's like, "Hey, how are you doing?" And I'm like, "Good. How are you?" His wheels are spinning, right? I'm like, "Who is this guy?" He looks at me and he goes, "Daryl Sittler." He sticks his hand out for a handshake, and I'm like, "Oh, like, what's up? Yeah, nice to meet you. I'm Miles," and talk to him for a little bit. And then he looks at Janelle and he's like, "You look really pretty tonight." And he walks away, and I'm like, "Daryl Sittler trying to steal my girlfriend?"
Daryl Sittler's got the wheels on Janelle? Oh my God.
is Daryl Sittler out here putting in work? So really cool event. He's got some great stories, great human, great hockey player. Leafs diehard. Like, did not try to hide the fact that he is an insane Leafs homer still. But, I mean, if you captain the Leafs for the amount of time he did, and if you're on Legends Row and everything like that, probably get away with being a homer. So, shout out Daryl Sittler. Got a nice picture with him, little autograph, and had a really nice night. So, that's why I didn't watch the Canucks game.
Yeah, cool. Listen to the pod, Daryl Sittler.
What? These boys are swearing too much.
Miles, should we get into the ugly?
Let's get into the ugly. And what better ugly is there than April 12th, when the Oilers pissed away another one with a poor effort against the Coyotes? Where have we heard that before? In a game where Arizona was facing crazy distractions about the news that they were maybe probably moving to Utah, they're on the road. The Oilers let the Oats win 3-2 in overtime off of a Matias Michelli bar tickler. He walked in and just blew it past Pickard. Josh Doan, he had a goal and an assist in the game. He looks pretty good as well in his recent call-up with the Oats. So shout out to the next generation of Doans. Too bad they won't be in Arizona.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Henrik and Nurse, would have been a lovely story.
Would have. Henrik and Nurse, they scored for the Oilers. The Oilers also in this game getting 1 point, locked up home ice in round one. But with the division on the line, losing this one really hurt. That compiled by their loss the next night against the Canucks really sealed the deal. Would have liked to see some killer instinct from the boys in blue with a chance to make some moves and lock up that home ice for two rounds. But, I mean, it is what it is. And that is why we're classifying it as the ugly.
Yeah, didn't like this one. Did not like it at all, Sam.
Just a low effort, shitty game. There was lots of times where I was yelling at the TV. I'm like, come on, let's go. And didn't seem to have a lot of get up and go, or like I said, killer instinct. So tough game. Just going to chalk it up to end of the year, not giving a fuck, which is too bad. It's really too bad.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the problem too, is you take these games, that gives you more advantage going into that game against the Canucks, where you could potentially make up those points, and you could possibly take a run at first in the division. But you know what, I think it kind of worked out for the best for everybody. So, speaking of working out for the best, season finale, last night. Yeah, April 18th. Saw a meaningless game in the standings play out against the Avs. Oilers sat their top seven scorers. Holy shit. Skinner, however, got the start, which was a little bit of an interesting choice. The Oilers allowed four first period goals, leading to a 5-1 loss. Skinny got pulled after allowing his fourth goal on nine shots. Not exactly sure why Knobloch went with Skinner. You would think that maybe you want to pump up your goaltender's confidence going into the playoffs, but I guess not. Anyway, McKinnon got two assists to give him the Avs/Nordiques franchise record for points in a season at 140. Dylan Holloway got the lone Oilers goal, and Philip Roberg with the assist. Philip Roberg, 2 points in two games. Nice to see. Good on the kid for staying hot. And Dylan Holloway's looked really good. Kind of giving Chris Knobloch a run for his money with regards to the lineup decisions.
Really going to be forcing his hands with how Knobber's going to be coming up with the lines for the playoffs. He's looked fantastic since being ejected into the lineup. And I mean, you got to give credit where credit's due. Broberg, the last couple games that he's played too, his skating and his confidence with the puck looks really good. I don't know. I don't think he's going to be slotting into the six defensive positions, but it's very promising to see that he's got some confidence. He's got a little bit of swagger. So hopefully that translates into next year. So when I type these notes, and I mean, I don't know, are you a bit of a head scratcher with the Skinner situation? I've had a little bit of time to internalize it. And about the only way, I don't think Knobloch or anybody on the team has made a like comment as to why they went that route. Have you seen anything?
I think that he probably would have said something in his post game, like, but I didn't listen to his post game yet.
Yeah.
So I've just been kind of, it's like I said, I'm just kind of at that point where I have so much, I've been so invested in this team all season that this kind of end of the season sort of lull has been really good for me to kind of like, all right, this is where I can kind of take a little bit of a step back and then playoffs ramp up and we're good to go. So.
I don't want to sound like too much of a conspiracy theorist or like goalie truther or anything like that, but my perspective on it, or I guess my take, is that they probably going into playoffs wanted to allow Skinner to have one more game where he gets to go through his like game day prep, his routine as the starter. You know, this is what I've got to do from the moment I wake up to the moment I get to the rink and start putting my equipment on, just to give him, you know, one more test drive. They probably talked about it. You get that opportunity to start the day, you play the first, we pull you, and then the game script changed because Avs came out flying and we're probably going to pull them at the end of the first anyway, and ultimately had to make the change halfway through, or yeah, three quarters of the way through the first period. That's what I think anyway, because I imagine they probably wanted to rest him regardless, or let him make the decision like, okay, yeah, you're coming out in the second, being a meaningless game. That's how I'm internalizing it. That's how I'm justifying it. And I think it makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. I completely agree. I think that people are making way too big of a deal out of this. In my personal opinion, if your goaltender is not ready to play game one because of a meaningless regular season game, then I don't know what to tell you. Your goaltender probably shouldn't be in the NHL.
Duck off the water's back. Not worried about Skinner.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to be okay.
Duck off a water's back. Am I fucking Ricky from Trailer Park Boys? Water off a duck's back. Holy shit.
You're me off the monkey's chest. Or get the monkey off your chest.
Monkey off your chest, baby. So that's the good, bad, and the ugly of the remaining games of the Oilers season. Let's get into some Oilers shit. And we kind of were talking about it with the Dylan Holloway injection into the lineup. Playoff lines, Dylan Holloway's emergence. What line combos would you like to see in the playoffs?
I think I would go. I would obviously. My first line would definitely be the Nuge McDavid Hyman line. Second line, I'd probably go. McLeod, Draisaitl, Fogle.
Okay, let me stop you for 1 second.
Yes.
And this is a bit of burying the lead. I mean, everybody knows who the Oilers at this point knows who the Oilers' first round matchup is. Surprise, surprise, it's the LA Kings, third installment.
Hooray!
My potential first line for this series would be Hyman, McDavid, and Evander Kane. Because I think Evander Kane on the forecheck with the piss and vinegar that he has and his hatred for the LA Kings could be a recipe for success to come out flying. And I think you could use Nuge elsewhere. But I agree with you because I think that McLeod, Draisaitl, Fogle line is really, really good. And I don't know how much I like Nuge playing on the third line with a mix of Henrique, Perry, and somebody else. Or I guess he would be the third player, right?
Yeah. I mean, the other way that I would even go about this is if you threw Henrique on the second line in the McLeod spot, and you keep that line that's been really good for the Oilers the last couple of games in Holloway, McLeod, and Perry. And I know people are not going to like this, but that means I would put Evander Kane on the fourth line. I know that sounds bad, but...
Well, it sounds bad, but Knobloch plays his fourth line. He doesn't Woodcroft him and sit him and play him 7 minutes, 6 minutes a night. Like, the fourth line for the Oilers does get a fair amount of ice time. So Evander Kane on the fourth line just depends who he's with and what kind of opportunities he's getting is an option too, for sure.
Yep. And then I'd probably go Kane with... I'll be honest, man, I really have not liked Sam Carrick. I just have not been into what he does. I don't know if he provides very much, but I'm assuming they're probably going to give him the first run because he is the guy they traded for to be a fourth line center. So it'd probably be Kane, Carrick, and then Connor Brown, I would probably go. So that means I would scratch Matthias Janmark.
Yeah, and DR, I guess, would unfortunately
DR
be a scratch in there too, right?
DR, Matthias Janmark. I mean, to be honest, man, I would love if this team played Sam Gagner, but I know they're not going to. Because I would love to see that. Was that fourth line? Wasn't it Janmark, Ryan, and Gagner? I think it was the fourth line that was like humming, like
last
earlier
night?
In the season. No, it wasn't last night. It was earlier in the season, but they looked really good together. And then what? Well, I guess if I did the forwards, what would you do for D pairings?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think that you, and well, it's a good question because it really brings up the conversation. Is Stetcher going to stay scratched? Do you think CeCe's done enough to warrant being Nurse's partner in the playoffs? My take, you're not messing with Ekholm Bouchard. That's your top pairing. Nope. You roll those guys together until the freaking cows come home.
Yep.
Third pairing, Vinny D and Brett Kulak, again, been very solid. I like them together a lot. Drum roll. Yeah, I think CeCe's done enough to warrant the start of playing with Nurse. I think he's looked pretty good. Unfortunately, since the deadline when they got Stetcher, I did really like Stetcher with Nurse though, but yeah. I think CeCe's turned his game up and he's a streaky player. We've talked about it a fair amount on the show. If he's playing hot and he's bringing out the best of Darnell and he's contributing and playing the way that he has been, I don't think that there's a reason to take him out.
And you know what? I'm okay with giving Cody CeCe the first dibs at it. I think at this point, like, he is your top four defenseman and there's no other way around it. And if you look into some of the underlying numbers and the analytics behind how they're actually being deployed, NHL Sid on Twitter actually did a lot of work on this. And well, the reason why the numbers on Darnell Nurse and Cody CeCe look so good is because Chris Knobloch is actually playing them against like lesser competition. So
he's making them like a
pseudo third pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A split 2-3 kind of thing.
Which you don't like to hear from a pairing that makes $12.5 million, but if it contributes winning hockey games, that's fine.
I do not give a shit how much money they play or how much money they make if the Oilers win the cup this year because they're playing well.
100%,
I do not
baby.
Care. Right. Yeah. And I think that's money out the window. Playoffs are starting. Vegas mentality.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I'll be calling 9.25 a steal with my frosted tips this summer.
Oh, baby. Yeah, dude, fair enough. And I mean, game 82, we were just talking about it, likely marking the final game for a number of players. Some of these guys are going to be playing in the playoffs, some won't. Just a quick opportunity to look at some of the pending UFAs. Calvin Pickard, he's a UFA. We'll just do it quick as a yes or no would you like to see him back next year? So Calvin Pickard, okay. He's a UFA, yes or no?
Yeah. For dirt cheap.
For dirt cheap. And depending what else is out there on the goalie market, because he was fine this year. Good guy, good story, fan favorite. This is not quick whatsoever. But I think he's like a 55-45 for me, yes.
Yeah.
Vinny D expiring.
100,000% bring him back.
And I would buy him a box of chocolates. Warren Fogel expiring, yes or no?
This is not going to be short. I'm sorry, everybody, but people need to pump the brakes with the, we need to re-sign Warren Fogel to like $3.5 or $4 million times like 4 years. Might I remind everybody that he hit a career high in points and goals in a contract year, and we know what this player is. I really like Warren
Fogel. We've been saying contract merchant every goal he's gotten this year. I know you don't have to convince me. I'm just saying.
I really like Warren Fogel. I would like to have him back, but that's the thing. He is like, he's a luxury, not a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Totally, totally depends on the money for me. If the price is right, 100%. But if Oilers are going to be money strapped going forward, and Ken Holland and whatever person is controlling him is going to need to be very cautious with how they spend money. So, Adam Henrique next up.
You skipped over Matthias Janmark. Poor guy.
I totally did. I guess that's kind of Matthias Janmark. Sorry, buddy. You're getting forgotten again.
Yeah, probably not. No. See you. Smell you later.
Unfortunately, it's a no for me as well. We said it last year. Can't fall in love with fourth liners.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You have to give the young guys a chance.
Adam Henrique?
Depends on money. Once again, if it was like $2.5 million, sure. But I'm pretty indifferent to it. I mean, ideally you'd like to bring a guy back after you spend a first round pick acquiring him, but it really literally all depends on money.
Yeah, 100%. I've liked him this year. I know the numbers haven't been very kind to him, but I like the game he plays. I like what he brings to the team. He's tough.
Hot.
Good hockey player. Hot. Yeah, dude. I would, as long as they can make the money work, I would really like to see 19 back next year.
Yeah.
Connor Brown.
If it's at League Min, sign me up, baby. If you're already paying him $3.25 million, why don't you fucking pay him full freight? Bring him back.
Yeah, he owes us one. So
exactly.
I don't think Connor Brown hit the potential that he has left. And you know what? You give him one more year. You don't pay him very much. Let him earn it and let him make his money somewhere else the year after.
He'll be 31. He'll be 31 as a UFA.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad if Connor Brown came back. I would be happy with that.
Yeah.
Corey Perry.
Yeah, I'm so in. Bring him back. Yeah, if it's like 100%. a $1 million deal, bring him back.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I can already tell where you're gonna go with this one. Sam Carrick.
Smell you later.
Yeah, I would agree, unfortunately. Peace out, dog. Troy Stetcher.
No. 70. No thanks. They're dime a dozen. You can find them everywhere.
Yeah, I like Stetcher as a player. I like Stetcher as a person. Don't want to fall into another Chris Russell kind of situation. Not that
exactly.
They're, you know what I mean? But I like Stetcher. I got a soft spot for him. But I think that there's too many guys knocking on the door to play with the big club next year. And they're going to have some questions to figure out with some of the young guys like Vinny D and Broberg next year. So Adam Ernie.
No,
see you later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seth Griffith.
Absolutely not. Or actually, you know what? Seth Griffith, I'd be kind of okay with, because he's like a career. He like dominates the AHL. Everybody seems to like him. Apparently he's like really helped with development for young guys, which is ironic because that's the one thing the Oilers have been lacking is development. But I'd be okay with that. The next guy though, get the hell out of my face.
Yeah. What's the deal with Greg McKegg? Like why do you hate him so much?
He's just not good at hockey.
That's
what are we doing here?
Fucking
sorry. That's
scars.
That's,
no, it's fine.
That's
it's
mean.
Fine.
That's mean to Greg McKegg.
Hey, hockey's business. Got to do what you got to do. Older guy with a roster spot in the AHL. If you're looking for player development, you can only keep so many of the vets around.
Like, I'm sorry, 20 points in 66 games in the AHL. Like, what are we doing here? I'm sorry, Greg.
We wish you the best, Greg.
Yeah.
And then Broberg and Holloway, both RFAs this year. It'll be interesting to see how the Oilers navigate those waters and how one of those young gentlemen contribute in the playoff run.
I think both are re-signed, and I think Broberg is... I think both are with the Oilers next season. Like, I think that they're both full-time Oilers next season. Because if I'm a betting man, I would say Brett Kulak is probably gone next season. And as much as I don't want to see him go, like, because I actually really like Brett Kulak. I think he's quite good, and he's just been a steady Eddie. That's one thing I've really liked about Brett Kulak. He's just steady.
If you're not talking about Brett Kulak, he's doing exactly what you need him to.
Nailed it. Miles, should we get into some of the stats?
I'm excited to get into these stats. So, I wouldn't say friend of the show because we've never really had much to do with him, but all around good guy and Oilers legend, Bob Stauffer tweeted some numbers about Chris Knobloch's time with the Oilers. Since being replaced midseason, or replacing Jay Woodcroft midseason, the Oilers were 46-18-5 under his tutelage. That is a 7.3 points percentage, first in the NHL over that span. They had a 72 positive goal differential, which is first in the NHL over that span. A 5-on-5 expected goals for of 56.87%. Whatever, who gives a shit what that number is? It's second in the NHL. Very good. Their goals for per game were 3.72. Again, second best in the NHL over that time. Really good. Goals allowed per game were 2.68. Fifth in the NHL. Very good as well. Power play was clipping along at about 27%. Good for third in the league. And their penalty kill, 81.7. Good for seventh in the league. So top five in most of the categories, but top 10 in all categories, fancy stats, whatever you want to call them, with Knobloch as the coach of the Oilers. That's got to be inspiring. That's got to be a very good sign.
Yeah, I completely agree. The number that actually sticks out to me, believe it or not, is the record. Because even if you subtract a 16-game winning streak, that's still a 30-18-5 record. That's still really damn good.
Mm-hmm. He's getting some Jack Adams consideration. I don't think you can really give the Jack Adams to a guy that coaches McDavid and Dreisaitl coming in there the way that he did, like in a half season, but or three quarter season, whatever you want to call it. But definitely getting some attention, which is awesome.
I have some takes regarding how I believe this playoff series is going to play out, but I'll save that for when we get into our actual playoff preview. But no, man, I've loved how this season turned out. I said this last episode and I'm saying it again, like, shit, where this team was like 6 months ago, oh my god, we were going crazy.
It's funny to look back on how tumultuous the season's been and take a little bit closer look at the Oilers when we get into the playoff shit. But a couple quick NHL points we want to talk about. And obviously the big news that has broke since the last time we recorded, we talked a lot about our opinion of the Yotes leaving Arizona and division realignment and yada, yada, yada. Well, it became official. Goodbye, Coyotes. Looks like they are moving to Utah. And the breaking news today is that the Smith Entertainment Group, the team that's buying the Coyotes, have filed applications for U.S. patent and trademark of the Utah Blizzard, the Utah Venom, the Utah Flurry, Utah HC, and Utah Hockey Club. So is that to say that one of those will be the official name of the team? Who knows? There's a lot of tight lips and no real information in that regard. But I mean, when you see patents and trademarks getting filed for that many, you clearly know what the top contenders are. News was saying that Ryan Smith, which is funny enough that that's the guy's name who's leading the charge in Utah. It's not our Ryan Smith. It is Ryan Smith. Was saying that he wants to make sure that the branding is right with the team and that he takes his time figuring out what they're going to be called and that he's not opposed to going into the season without having a nickname, which is absolutely ludicrous in my opinion, but it's his team. He can do what he wants. And clearly if he's filing patents and trademarks, he's got an idea where they're going to go. Utah Blizzard sounds kind of cool.
You're sure you don't want to go, you don't want to go the Washington route and go Utah Hockey Club?
No, I'm sure I don't want to do that. I'm quite positive that I don't want to go the Utah Hockey Club route.
I just wanted to quickly mention off of the back of this story, one thing that we didn't mention in the last episode that I wanted to mention too, is that, Alex Morello, the, owner of the Arizona Coyotes, fun fact, if anybody didn't know this, so he is going to get $1 billion for the Coyotes in this sale. So, like I
that's
said
crazy.
Before, yeah, because I think he purchased it for $400 million, so he's about to pocket $600 million. That's great. Secondly, he also gets to essentially be the break glass in case of emergency for expansion. So, apparently the deal is that he will own the patent for the Arizona Coyotes name. And like the actual team, he's going to own the team, the Arizona Coyotes, but that like player personnel and coaching and management, all that will all be transferred to Utah. But when he can come up with the plans for an arena and he can get the arena built, he is basically first on the list to be like, hey guys, I'm ready to go. And they're like, okay, yeah, here you go. Here's your team. Completely insane stuff by the NHL. I think it's a absolute travesty that this man gets to keep this hockey club, and I think it's ridiculous. I don't know if you saw the quote today that he had where he basically said, "Oh, I hate the media. They just come up with all these stories." Dude, you fucking did this to yourself. Your team is an absolute dumpster fire. Like, quit. One of my least favorite things is when people do the classic, like, oh, the media, when it's like you're the one making these idiotic decisions. It's like when, you know, Kyrie Irving would say dumb shit in the media or say dumb shit on Twitter, and then you'd say, the media is fucking throwing me under the bus for this. Like, yeah, dude, you did it yourself.
Very, very Trump school of media relations, yeah. But I mean, it is what it is.
Many people are saying, anyways, go
yeah. We'll talk more about expansion and all this sort of stuff as news breaks, but I'm sure if you're listening to this show, you care enough about hockey that you've checked out a little bit of this and maybe heard our last episode where we talked about Yotes and divisions and Utah and everything like that in great detail. So we'll spare you the rehash and I hate saying this, but listen to the last episode if you want to hear a little bit more about it. Otherwise, I'm sure you're going to hear about it in future episodes. One thing that's really important, like I can't emphasize how important this is. So Jeff Carter retired, called it a career. Sucks. It's whatever. It's sad. Longtime guy, played with Flyers. He played with the Kings. He played in Columbus for a little bit and then ended things off in Pittsburgh. So obviously good friend of Jonathan Quick's, right? Won a couple cups together, whatever. Yep. So his family posts a retirement picture after playing a game. Jonathan Quick was there as a fan supporting his buddy. Took a picture with their kids after the game, right? Cool. Nice moment. That's awesome between two families. Jonathan Quick's 3-year-old son was wearing a full Givenchy sweatsuit in Jeff Carter's retirement pick. I never want to hear about Jonathan Quick complaining about money because it's fucking crazy to give a kid that kind of designer drip when he's just going to spill Capri Sun and animal cracker crumbs on it. Blows my mind. I don't know why people aren't talking about this. Sweats and hoodie. I didn't see what he was wearing on feet, but this kid is swagged out at the rink, getting it sticky. He's wearing my mortgage payment and getting fucking cotton candy shrapnel on it. I just don't understand. I would like to see how the 1% does it. I'd like a view into that world, please. I'm buying a $20 Amazon golf set for my best friend's kid's birthday gift, struggling to see how I'm gonna make it work, and this fucking guy's
you're
wearing,
buying a golf set for a kid.
It's plastic, it's $20.
Oh,
it's not,
oh, it's plastic.
I'm making a joke.
Oh,
I'm making
oh
a joke.
I thought you were buying an actual golf set.
She's one.
I mean, you could be buying a fucking set of TaylorMade's, we don't know.
Yeah, you want You know, gets Strixon at one. But it's just, it's insane to me that this kid is wearing a Givenchy sweatsuit. That's all I wanted to say. That's my throwing fits with Miles.
One of my best friends growing up used to do that classic, like, where you know when people do the classic, like, I'm not like other people, and he'd be like, oh, when I grow up, my kids aren't gonna wear Nike or designer brands. They're just gonna, you know, they're just gonna wear superhero clothes and all that stuff. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we'll see how that turns out. Your kid's gonna be asking for fucking, your kid's gonna be asking for a fucking Nike Tech at like 11 years old.
I wear Nike Tech because I don't like to shop.
Just wants to look like 21 Savage.
21.
White kid in Regina.
My kid won't stop calling me a pussy because they want to be like 21 Savage. That's my dream, honestly.
21 Savage.
Speaking of dreams,
Poppy.
Austin Matthews gave us a gift. 69 goals on the season.
So sick.
We would have loved to see 70, but the consolation prize of 69 is all-time shitposting meme god work. Not to say that he didn't try, because he had 12 shots in his last game, and he had one of those go off the bar. So damn close. If you didn't love watching him score goals this year, you are simply a hater. Also, he had like 15 bars on the season, so he like legitimately could have been in the 80 zone, which is kind of crazy to think about. Goes without saying, he wins the Rocket for the year. He was leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else in the league. I think Sam Reinhart was second, and he had like 54 or something like that, 56. And then Zyman was there with third and 54 goals. So Matthews was a fucking machine this year, and it was awesome to see him play. He was lit up.
He was so good. And my God, oil country, you guys need to calm down with getting so butthurt over Sportsnet covering the fact that Austin Matthews is about to score 70 goals. By the way, Miles, on a side note, open up Instagram and look at Leon's latest post. It is the fucking sexiest thing I've ever seen.
I'm not ready to go.
Man, all I saw were people being like, oh, just because he's in Toronto. It's like, dog, scoring 70 dog. Goals is scoring 70 goals. Like, what are we doing here? The 14-15 season, we would have been begging for this to happen. Like, this is crazy.
I'm going to pass this along. Watch Leon Draisaitl's last post where he's slow-mo walking onto the ice. It's
his hair.
It's
so
good stuff.
That's not slicked back. That's pushed back.
he's ready for playoffs, dude. He's going to be dripped out. So we've got Matthews winning the Rocket. That's awesome. Connor Hellebuck, he won the William M. Jennings Award. He's the first Jets goalie to do so. He was a monster this year. Dude, he was like third in the league for shots faced. So the fact that he won the Jennings with the amount of rubber he faced, dude is the like walk-off candidate for the Vezina. He played great. He's going to be getting some hardware this year, I think. I'm a big Hellebuck fan. Best goalie in the world right now.
Oh, 100%. One of my hot takes, Connor Hellebuck probably should be nominated for the Hart.
Yeah. He's fantastic, dude. He had a great year this year.
33 goals saved above expected. He like had 11 more goals saved above expected than Thatcher Demko, who's in second. That's crazy.
Very, very crazy.
So good.
The last individual award winner that we have, Nikita Kucherov. He won the Art Ross most points, 144.
Never would have expected that out of him.
Yeah, it's crazy how Russian. It's crazy how Russian guys just float around and look like they're not trying. This is a complete stolen valor of the Heat Daddy tweet, but like Russian guys just float around and look like they're not trying and get 144 points. It's actually crazy.
I'm just taking a look at Nikita Kucherov's like career in totality. Wow, how sick was that? That was a good one.
Don't forget that he is the OG LTIR merchant.
That is true. Actually, no, Patrick Kane is.
Patrick Kane's the OG LTIR merchant?
He is, because that was the 15 season when they got Antoine Vermette at the trade deadline. They paid a first to get Antoine Vermette. And they were like, Patrick Kane's like, oh, I got an ouchy little knee or something like that. And then it's like, oh, see you later. I'm back. And then Patrick and Kane, then.
I was going to say Patrick Kane walked so Mark Stone could run.
Exactly. And then friggin' guy, Marian Hossa. Oh, I got a little equipment allergy. Oh.
That's not funny, because that's like actually fucked his life up.
Has it?
Yeah, dude.
You hold on. Let me Google this. I'm not going to be made to feel bad.
No, dude, I want you to Google it, but yeah, he's got like a Marian Hossa
equipment allergy. It literally comes up as one of the very first. He was diagnosed by emphysema 6 years ago, triggered by the combination of his sweat and hockey equipment. Ow. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, dude, like it was like extremely painful for him to play his
to be
like,
fair, to be to fair, be fair. To be fair, it was a little suspect. What are people on Reddit saying? That's probably a pretty trustworthy source.
Yeah, no, Reddit's guaranteed to be factual. I actually got through university. I'm just quoting Reddit in all of my essays.
Because it was just a little bit of peculiar timing that the downfall of Marian Hossa was coming, and they were like, oh, guess what? We have some cap space now because he can't play anymore, but he's not retiring.
Lube him up. He's just got to play 16 in the playoffs. Yeah. Lube him, grease him up.
I only had 45 points in 73 games. Guess what? I'm not coming back. Man, he was so good. Shout out Marian Hossa.
Talking about Marian Hossa. Yeah, Sens legend.
Yeah, Thrashers legend. Winnipeg Jets legend, Marian Hossa.
Marian Hossa.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you ready?
Are you ready for number two?
I cracked it like a while ago.
Well, guess what I'm gonna call it? They call it a pussy.
You don't drink like we do out there, you know?
Just a bunch of farmers here. Get the fuck.
We might be on three watch here.
Speaking of beers, Miles, do you want to hear a quick funny little story before we start? My neighbor came over before we started recording, and I asked him because we're gonna replace the doors in my house, like all the bedroom doors, and so I wanted to get some advice from him on like what I should do, whether I should buy pre-hung doors and put those in, or I should just buy doors and then just cut them to go in. And so he came over. What's the very first thing I do? Offer him a beer, classically. And what kind of beer do I offer him? Yeah, and what kind of beer do I offer him? I offer him a Miller High Life, the champagne of beers, as they say. And what immediately happens? Cracks it open, spills all over him. It fucking exploded everywhere. I feel so bad. Invite the guy over to get some classic contractor advice, and beer goes all over him. And then Taylor was telling me afterwards, this killed me. I thought it was so funny. I love our neighbor. He's just the best. And because we have coyotes across the street. We have like a big closed off sort of forest, and it's owned by General Electric. And so nobody's not allowed to go over there. It's all fenced off, but there's coyotes that live over there. So you can sometimes hear them at night. And he says to Taylor, hey, have you seen the coyotes? And then she's like, yeah, I have. He's like, oh, they look healthy. They look all nice and trim. Nice coat on them too.
The guy's just a fucking wildlife enthusiast. Good coat on him. Good healthy.
Polishes off his Miller in like 10 minutes. Yep, see you later. I'll invite you over for a barbecue next week. He's the best.
How old is he?
He's probably in his mid-50s.
Oh, that's so fucking cool.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy, man? They're doing renovations next door, and they're going hard on the renovation. They're adding a second level to their house.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's not a renovation. That's like a full build.
Oh, he is working like a dog out there. You should see him on his friggin' tractor. or his ex or his excavator.
Handler.
Uh-oh, it's time for an ad read. The chase for the Stanley Cup is on, and if you're looking to light the lamp, nothing beats the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of the playoff beards all the way to the hoisting of the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. It's Saturday, April 20th. The start of the playoffs is today. You got Leafs versus Bruins. Maybe you're feeling a little same-game parlay action. There's one available I'm looking at right here. Maybe get the Leafs on the puck line. Matthews to score a goal. Over 5.5 goals total in the game. It feels like every time these two teams play, they usually have a bit of an offensive firepower-fueled event. But, you know, I tell you every week, the option is yours. They're all out there. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers bet just $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's code THPN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/ice for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. Should we get to the playoff preview, Merrills?
I think so. I think it's probably time.
All right. Panthers versus Lightning.
Oh, are we keeping that?
I might keep that, I think. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, a little bit of bonus stuff.
Yeah.
All right. We got the 2023-2024 playoff preview. We're going to be starting in the Eastern Conference and then obviously work our way to the best. But West is best. Again, excuse me, I have to burp. Beers, dude.
Oh, man, I'm going to be burping too. It's okay.
We're degenerates. Yeah. Okay, so again, this is the order of operations. We're going to tell you how the teams did in the regular season, kind of a little bit of their storyline, some of their dynamos, the season series against the team that they're playing. Once we wrap that up, we're going to give our game breakers for each team, players that we think are going to be the big difference makers in order for their team to win the series. And then we'll give you our prediction. Might be a little bit of banter in between, but I mean, either way, we're going to get through it and we're going to have some fun. So let's start it off. Battle of Florida, Panthers versus Lightning. The Battle of Florida is something we have been gifted with a few times in the bracket age. Usually it's Tampa and the runaway favorites. But now we see the Panthers take over Southern supremacy, finishing 52-24-6 on the year for first in the Atlantic Division. Florida went 2-1-0 in the season series against the Lightning. Tampa Bay, they come into the playoffs as the wild card one team, finishing with a 45-29-8 record on the year. Nikita Kucherov, as mentioned, had 144 points on the year. Second on his team was Braden Point with 90. That is a bit of a gap in production. Florida had even more production, even production throughout their lineup and comes into this one with a tough matchup, but the players to get it done. Nolan, my game breaker for Florida, the player that needs to show up in order for this team to win, played it simple, played it safe. Their leading scorer, Sam Reinhart. If he comes out, gets it done on the power play, gets it done on 5-on-5, I think that he's going to give the Panthers their best chance to win this series.
Yeah, I think Sam Reinhart's a really good choice. He, the guy, how many goals did he score? Like 50 something?
56, I think.
Yeah.
He was a bit of a bucket this year, man.
Yeah, he
contract
was
contract year.
Oh, contract year merchant in the most prominent role. Yeah, 57, man.
57 37 for 94.
That's nuts. What a wow! That is some wacko tobacco nonsense.
who's your Panther boy?
My Panther boy. I mean, it's gonna tell us everything right away. If he's amazing in the first round, then they're gonna go on a run. If not, they're out. Sergei Bobrovsky. Every year, it's kind of the will they won't they with Sergei Bobrovsky. Will he be good? Will he be bad? Will he be good? Will he be bad? And as it stands right now, Sergei Bobrovsky had a pretty good year. I didn't pull up his actual numbers, but I know he did finish with above a 910, which is good.
He had 36 wins with a 2.37 and a 9.15.
Good season. Great season. Good season for him.
Great numbers.
And that was coming off of the last year where he was 9.01. But in the playoffs, Sergei Bobrovsky turned it up a notch. So if he comes out and he is the dominant Bobrovsky that we know he can be, then I think Florida can run this all the way back to the Stanley Cup final. If not, I think this is where the team will eventually fall apart. So I really like Florida's chances in this series, needless to say.
Mm-hmm. Going on the other side of the ice.
Yeah, I was going to say, who is your game breaker for the Lightning?
You know, I was struggling between two guys here. I can see yours, so I don't think I'm burying the lead on this one. Nikita Kucherov. Like, if your top scorer has 144 points and your second leading scorer has 90, there's one guy on this team that is the lifeblood of production. And if Nikita Kucherov comes out and gets like 12 points in the first round, I think that that's what they're going to need in order to beat Florida, because they are serious, serious underdogs. The other guy I wanted to pick was Vasilevsky. He had a down year for his standards, 900 save percentage, which is low for him, and a 290 goals against average. I think that if Vasilevsky comes out and plays like Vasilevsky, they can steal games and make up for whatever lack of offense they have. But I think it's really going to come down to Kucherov. If he's able to put the puck in the net and set guys up, that's how you win games.
Miles, my game breaker, by the way, very logical game breaker. He could, I mean, Nikita Kucherov can quite literally break the game for you. So it doesn't surprise me. Miles, my guy, did you know he is nicknamed the Oxbow Ox?
Every time Tampa Bay plays and we're watching a Tampa Bay game, Janelle's like, do you know he played in Moose Jaw? And I'm like, yeah, I know.
My pick is Tanner Janelle. Reason being, in 2025, Miles, the Tampa Bay Lightning will be selecting not in the first round, because that pick will be going to the Nashville Predators for said Tanner Janelle. Tanner Janelle, so far in his career, last season he had 4 points in 20 games with the Tampa Bay Lightning. This year he had 14 points in 55 games. So what we would probably say is not an improvement, needless to say. But ultimately, in a series that's going to be as physical as this one between these two teams that absolutely despise each other and can put up the offense, this guy needs to be the pain in the ass you need in the bottom six. And maybe he can move up and down the lineup. It's more than possible. But you need Tanner Janot to resemble something of what you traded for, of what you sent all these assets for. And this is the type of player that you make a name for in the playoffs. And so I don't know if the odds are great that Tanner Janot is going to actually show up and be something in the playoffs for the Lightning, but I think they need him. I think they need him to turn into something. Like, yeah, even last year he played in three games, had no points, and he was a -2. So, like, he has to turn into something, because this is going to just turn out to be a complete bust of a trade if he does little to nothing. So, my guy's Tanner Janot.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. And, you know, we're going to be doing a lot of cliches in this, talking about like, oh, you know, teams got experience and know how to win. And like, this guy's a playoff player and he's made for it. But playoffs are really where legends are made. And like you said, Tanner Janot's got a lot of capital put into him as a player for this Tampa Bay Lightning team. And if he doesn't show up during the regular season and shows up for the playoffs, well, one cup makes it worth it. A couple series wins makes it worth it. And I agree with you, man. It's a good pick. I think Tampa's downfall last year in their first round exit against the Leafs was their lack of scoring from their top players, like Kucherov, Stamkos, Cirelli, Point. I think they combined for like 6 goals, which is brutal, right? So I don't really know where I'm going with this. I think that's why you got to have your good players show up, and you've got to have your offensive players putting out offense, and your defensive players limiting chances for the other team. Very basic, not great analysis, but I mean, it is what it is. Unfortunately, I don't think that Tampa Bay has the depth that they have in previous years. And again, speaking in cliche, Florida went to the dance last year and looked really good and surprised a lot of people, beat a lot of really good teams to get there, and have a good number of those guys coming back. And I think that they're going to pull a bit of an Uno reverse on Tampa from previous years, where they might not be the, darlings of the regular season, but a bunch of guys that know how to win and know how to play hard in the playoffs. So I have Florida winning this series in five games.
Yeah, the last time these two teams played, the identity of this team was so much different. They were that fast, sort of like offensively stacked roster. And now they've turned
Tampa?
Into... No, Florida.
Florida, yeah. Back in the Huberto days.
Yeah, like the Huberto, Giroux, all those guys stage. And they have turned into such a nasty pain in the ass team. I think that we're destined to see Florida maybe go on another run here, because they just look so goddamn good. I've got Florida in six.
I love it.
Yeah.
We're not fighting yet, which is good. Let's see how this one goes, because next up is the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs, an original six matchup that we have seen three times since 2010. The Bruins have won all of those first round matchups. The Leafs playoff struggles, I mean, they're well documented, but they were able to get out of the first round last year. Bruins, they went 47, 20, and 15 in the regular season. Horrible third period team. While the Leafs went 46, 26, and 10. As mentioned, Boston was horrible in the third period, giving up a lot of wins. Will they be able to close games out in the playoffs, or will their regular season struggles continue into the postseason? Pasternak is the only player on this team to top 70 points. Toronto has a ton of skill up front, with Matthews, Nylander, and Marner leading the way. Will the Big Bad Bruins find a way to continue their ownership of the Leafs? The season series was 4-0 Boston, with two of those games being decided in overtime. Nolan, my game breaker for the Bruins, X factor, whatever you want to call it, simply comes down to goaltending. I don't know if they're going to go with Linus Allmark, or if they're going to go with Jeremy Swayman, if they're going to try to let one of those guys get hot or flop him out at the first sign of faltering. Allmark was unbelievable last year, right? Hasn't been up to that same standard this year. Swayman's been a little bit better. With Boston having their identity of, you know, that former top line that was just eating teams up, and maybe having to get a little bit more depth throughout the lineup, I think goaltending is going to be the difference maker, and seeing if Allmark or Swayman can get hot, and if they're able to stifle Mr. 69 goals and his supporting cast of the Leafs, because that team can put the puck in the net. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I'm totally into that. My guy that I've picked as the game, or the X factor, game breaker, or whatever, for the Boston Bruins is Brad Marchand. I don't know if you've noticed, Miles, but the last two seasons, this is his second season where he has not scored a point per game.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think that this team reached the high of highs when he was on that perfection line with David Pastrnak and Patrice Bergeron. Obviously, Bergeron and Krejci are gone from the squad now, but I feel like there's a little bit of something missing from this team now, and it's that overall scoring punch that they used to have. Mm-hmm. And I worry about that going up against Toronto. Once again, I know that they finished with a really great record, but I really worry about your top two centers being Charlie Coyle and friggin' Pavel Zacha. Like, I don't think that's crazy to think. I'm just not sure. I'm really just not sure. So my point that I'm getting to is, can Brad Marchand turn it up? He loves playing the Leafs. He loves relishing in controversy. He loves being the center of attention. And this is a major question, is can he elevate his game much higher than it's been all season. Obviously, he had 67 points, which is still a good season, especially at 35 years old. But for a guy we've seen put up, you know, 87, 80, 85, 100 points previously in his career, this is a precipitous drop-off. So can he show up and will this Boston Bruins team to the next level? That's what I wonder.
Your captain's got to be your captain and come the playoffs, and especially with a guy who's got the firepower he does. I like it. I think it's a good take, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Plays very nicely off of my game breaker for the Maple Leafs, and I think it's going to come down to goaltending for the Leafs. I think that they've got more than enough skill to put the puck in the net. That might win them a series, but I don't think that that wins them a cup. I don't know. Samsonov, I think, is their number one guy. Martin Jones, they've got joining the squad for the playoff run. And who's this guy? Joseph Woll is their second, their backup kind of guy. If the Bruins play the way that the Bruins can play and with the speed and skill that they have in their offensive group, I mean, some guys that aren't really proven, like a Jesper Boqvist and, like, I mean, Jake DeBrusque to some degree. If they play Bruins hockey, because the Bruins are that team where the past couple seasons in our start of the season preview, I'm like, they're done, they're washed, they're frauds, they got nobody. And then the puck drops and the Bruins play Bruins hockey. That's kind of what I'm banking on for the playoffs. And that's what's putting the pressure on the Leafs for me, is being able to keep the puck out of the net and, you know, limit the damage that their back end gives up.
Yeah. My game breaker for Toronto is it's Mr. Gritty. It's Mitch Marner.
Minchie.
I mean, by Mitch Marner standards, this season was a bit of a disappointment. Obviously, he only played like 60-something games, but I think he put up, 85 points or something like that this season. I mean, Mitch Marner and playoff performance are synonymous with one another, not in a good way. So I'm wondering, once again, it's sort of similar to Marchand. It's like, can you elevate your game to the next level? Can you be one of these top tier talents? Can you be like a Connor McDavid, like a Leon Draisaitl? Oh my God, I'm looking at his hockey reference right now. And you know how they show the nicknames underneath the players? Do you want me to read off all of the nicknames for Mitch Marner?
I want you to scream them to me. I need to hear this.
I'm gonna leave. Can I leave the best one for last? Yes, absolutely.
Is one Mr. Gritty?
No.
Is one Daddy's Boy?
Nope.
Is one Bitch Marner?
Not quite, but okay.
Really
good guess. The first one is Marns. Next one is Mitchy. Next one is Magic Mitch. Mouse. Mickey Mouse. The Magician. And Miles, my favorite. Because you're amazing. Bruno Marns.
Bruno Marns?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I liked Mouse. I think Mouse is my favorite.
You'd be getting torched in the locker room for being nicknamed Bruno Marns.
Bruno Marns is tough.
I need to see some fact-checking on this shit.
I love that shit. That's awesome.
I think I'm going to start doing this for all of our game breakers. I'm just going to look them up on Hockey Reference so I can see their nicknames.
Oh, dude. Friend of the show, Pat. Good dude. He's a big Leafs guy. And he's like, I'm just wondering who's going to take the Leafs' annual playoff sacrifice of getting suspended.
Is it Mitch Marner's turn?
Dude, I don't know whose turn it is, but it's my favorite tradition of playoff hockey.
Oh, I got to take a look at that. Who's on the roster that's going to get suspended?
I don't think Ryan Reeves is going to play, but I feel like he's the odds-on favorite.
I don't think he's getting it, though.
No.
This
seems too obvious.
this stinks of Jake McCabe.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this McCabe. Smells like Jake McCabe. It's like one of their best defensemen. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A couple of little three gamer for a check to the head. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jake McCabe.
Did you see all the Leaf fans being like, we got Cade Weber? He like signed a college UFA.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's 6 foot six, guys.
Bradshaw Living loves that kind of shit. Oh, yeah. So I'm conflicted a little bit with my series prediction. My heart's telling me one thing and my brain's telling me another. I'm going to go with what my heart says because I have some really good friends who support the show, who are big Bruins guys. Shout out Bruins fan band. Shout out T9. And it's making me pick the Bruins in six.
I like that pick. It's good. It's very informed, very smart. I think you've done a lot of research. It's been good to see. I hate that I'm doing this again. Leafs in seven.
You know what, dude? That's what my head was telling me was Leafs in seven. So I don't blame that pick at all.
They conquered the first round demons last year. Whether you can do it again, I think they can. I think they can do it. The Oilers exercised their playoff demons 2 years ago when they beat LA, and they won again last year. So maybe this will be the year for the Leafs where they where they can once again make it to the second round and hopefully the third round for them or for their sake. Miles, do you want to talk about the Rangers and the Capitals?
I would love to talk about the Rangers and the Capitals, and I mean, let's get it out of the way here, dude. The Capitals. They find themselves in the postseason once again, despite a negative 37 goal differential on the year. Holy shit. Needing all 82 games to get the X. They finished 40-31-11 for the wild card 2 spot. The reward for clawing and battling into a playoff spot is the President's Trophy winning Rangers, who were 55-23-4 on the season. They've been solid all year long. Production up and down the lineup. Solid goaltending. Great defense. The Rangers are going to be tough to handle. Washington, I mean, they held their own. They got a 2-2 split in the season series. Do the Caps have enough magic in them to get a little help from the President's Trophy curse and knock off the Rangers? Time will tell. My game breaker for the Rangers, a bit of an unorthodox jukebox for a pick here. It's a little Bruno Marner joke. My game breaker for the Rangers is Adam Fox. Obviously a terrific defenseman, a guy that can contribute in his own zone and offensively. He's great on the power play. If he's able to slow the game down and, you know, play as a leader, play as a number one, top three worldly defenseman, I think it's going to make things really, really easy on the Rangers to make this a quick series. And I think he's more than capable of it.
Mine is Alexis Lafreniere for the Rangers. He had a bit of a breakout season this year. I believe he had like almost 60 points, which was great to see. You'd obviously expect a little bit more out of your first overall pick, but you got to take baby steps. And once again, the guy is only 22 years old. This could be the start of a really great career from, 57 points in 82 games. That's a good season.
This could be the including, start including of almost, something new.
including right. almost 30 goals. Oh, I don't care. Including almost 30 goals. So, man, 26 goals at even strength for Alexis Lafreniere. That's amazing. That's an awesome season.
Yeah, dude, you call it baby steps, but you got to be proud of him. He finally looks like he showed up.
Yeah, I think so. And I'd love to see him become one of the next big stars in this league. So it's great to see. And really, like, the Rangers need depth. What?
I want to say, can I say something mean? You know what I'd like to see for Alexis Lafreniere?
What?
Another season just like he had. That has people enough of a feeling of optimism around him so that when his contract expires with the Rangers, he gets paid a mega deal to play with the Canadiens and sucks. That's what I would like to see.
Oh, yeah. That would rule. Or
I'm a masochist. I'm a bad guy.
Or He plays so well that there's a massive deal to be made between the Habs and the Rangers with that you drummed up in your black cauldron of Alexi Lafreniere for Juraj Slafkovský, and then Juraj Slafkovský is amazing and Lafreniere stinks.
Yeah, just Jager 2.0.
Yeah, that would rule. That's the move right there. God.
You know what? That's the power of Canadian media, is that we're talking about the Rangers and Capitals and have made it about the Habs. TSN hates these guys.
How can we make it about the Oilers? Next up, Miles, your game. Actually, we kind of have the same game breaker for the Caps, right?
Yeah, we do. I mean, I put Lindberg and Nolan put Capitals goaltending.
Is that Lindgren?
Lindgren. Why did I say Lindberg? I'm thinking Pelle Lindbergh, like the goalie for the Flyers way back in the 70s, which is
That's okay.
Hell of a pull. So Lindgren took over. If you've not been watching a lot of Caps games, and sorry, Caps fans, I mean, we don't blame the folks for not watching the Caps. That's a dig. Lindgren took over from Kemper as the team starter, playing 50 games this season for the Caps. 2.67 goals against average and a 9.11 RIP save percentage.
Jesus, so he's really taking
really took the reins over for the Caps this year. And from talking to Caps fans and seeing Caps fans on Twitter, it sounds like he really, you know, took a hold of that opportunity and played some really good hockey for them. And they think that there's a lot of magic in that mustache. So if he's able to stand on his head and dominate a series, I don't know if he's that kind of goalie. I haven't watched enough of his game. I'm not familiar enough with him to say that. But if he's able to do that, and if he can put that together, that's your game breaker, Caps. That's your boy that's going to be the difference maker in the series.
I just thought Charlie Lindgren was French. He's actually from Lakeville, Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota!
Minnesota.
A little pop there, boy.
Yeah, man. You gotta hope that Charlie Lindgren is the guy for the Capitals. At the end of the day, I really don't think it's gonna matter a whole lot. I know that the Capitals are going into this as a massive underdog, and there is the President's Trophy curse. We can just get into it right now. I have the Rangers sweeping the Capitals. I do not think this is going to be particularly close at all.
No, I mean, that's fair. I also have the Rangers, but I have them winning in six simply because I think you're gonna get two OV games. You can't discredit
vintage Ovechkin games.
I think you're gonna get at least two of them where he's got, you know, two goals and two assists or two goals and one assist and is just enough for the Caps to edge him. And I mean, the fact that they were a 2-2 split in the season series. I mean, the Capitals must play them all right. And I'm going to directly contradict myself because in the West, I'm like, season series doesn't matter. Who gives a fuck? Doesn't count. But in this one, the fact that the Caps were able to hang in with them twice, I think they're good for at least two. And that's making me say Rangers in six.
Alex Ovechkin, one of his nicknames is The Mechanic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. He's out there cool. Changing tires.
I'm taking a look at his shot count because I want to see what his shooting percentage was this season. Wow, his shots have gone down pretty significantly over the last few years. That's stinky. Oh, he actually shot under his career average this season. So maybe that's a sign that he is. It's 895 for Gretzky, right? Is what he's got.
Sounds right. I don't know.
Yeah, I think something like that. Or maybe that's what Ovi has to reach to pass him. So he's like 42 goals away. Maybe he can do that next season. I love how there's a playoff series about to happen, and I'm already like, yeah, sorry, Capitals, you're not making it past here. So let's talk about next season.
Let's talk about next series. How about that?
Good segue.
Oh, he's a professional. Yeah. It is the Hurricanes and the Islanders. The Hurricanes continue to be a very good team up and down the lineup, finishing 52-23-7 for second in the Metro. They finished 3 points behind the Rangers, who were the best team in the NHL this year. Third-year darling Seth Jarvis, he stepped up to be third on the team on the Canes in scoring with 33 goals and 34 assists. They seem to have found their goalie with Pyotr Kechetkov starting 40 games. Kechetkov winning 23 of them. The Islanders, they found their way in the second half, locking up third in the Metro with a 39-27-16 record off of the back of Ilya Sorokin, Matt Barzal, and Noah Dobson, who will be back for game one. This season series finished 2-2 with each team winning an overtime game. This should be a defensive battle, but look to see if the Islanders, who went 8-1-1 in their last 10, can keep the heat up in the playoffs. This is no surprise because I've been waxing poetically about this guy for the whole year on the pod. My game breaker for the Canes is Seth Jarvis. I think you know what you've got with Aho, Teravainen, and Svechnikov. You've got a game plan for them. But Seth Jarvis is a killer 5-on-5. I think he's really finding the type of player that he is in this league in his third year. And if he's able to go out there and, I mean, playoffs, power plays, shorthanded situations, they're going to happen, but a lot of games are won 5-on-5, and Seth Jarvis is one of the better 5-on-5 players in the NHL this year. He's my choice for game breaker.
My choice for game breaker is the guy they traded for. The guy that they're hoping is solves the problems they've had in years past, and that player is Jake Guentzel. I don't know if you saw it, Miles, but Jake Guentzel
has been a freak of nature since he joined the Hurricanes, dude.
25 points in 17 games has just been electric, and I think one of the most damning numbers for anybody playing against the Hurricanes. 25 points in 17 games. That pace would be a career high. Miles, his career average for time on ice is 19.08. He is currently playing on the Carolina Hurricanes 1730 a game.
Perfect.
He is in an absolutely advantageous position. It is absolutely killing me watching him play on the Carolina Hurricanes and be awesome, when in fact he could have been playing on the Edmonton Oilers, playing on Leon Draisaitl's wing, and I want to scream. So my pick is Jake Guentzel, otherwise known as Gents, otherwise known as Gensy, otherwise known as Jake and Bake.
Those are three of the most hockey nicknames I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, he's sick. He's unreal. And I think he's going to fit in really nicely in this series. Your game break for the Islanders.
Well, this is where it gets confusing. And I don't know if it should be confusing or why it's confusing. But I put Varlamov? For those who don't know, Semyon Varlamov, the backup goalie for the New York Islanders, won all four of his last starts. And as mentioned, the Islanders were 8-1-1 in their last 10. So when I say his four last starts, if we go a little bit deeper into that, five of his last starts, and he was 6-1 in his last seven. So they're obviously mixing the two of them in, but I was reading a report today doing some prep for this show. That they're like, Patrick Waugh is not sure who he's going to start, because reminder, Patrick Waugh is the coach for the Islanders now, is not sure which goalie he's going to go with for the playoffs. So if it's Varlamov, he's my X factor, because a hot goalie in the playoffs is a hell of a recipe for success. And this guy's won a lot in his career. He's a good goalie. And if he's able to steal a few games, I mean, anything can happen. That being said, if it is Sorokin, he is damn good in his own right and can easily win himself a playoff series. So I might just condense it and say goaltending.
That would be such a Patrick Waugh move, playing Semyon Varlamov when you have one of the best goalies in the league in Ilya Sorokin. Yeah, man, I picked Ilya Sorokin just because of the whole he's amazing factor. But I think you made a good pick. But ultimately I don't think it matters too much, because, well, Miles, I'm picking the Canes in five. I think this is going to be a pretty quick series.
I don't want to sound like too much of a fence rider, because I did change my original pick. I don't know if you noticed.
I certainly did.
I originally had the Islanders in seven winning this series, and I changed it to the Canes in six. And I don't know if that's going to bite me in the ass, but I would not be surprised if this was the series that was a underdog story. I think if any one of these series, I think a lot of the rest of them are pretty, in the Eastern Conference anyway, are pretty fair. I mean, Bruins Leafs is a bit of a coin flip, but the other two series, I think you can easily kind of pick a leader in that. This is the one where I could see the Islanders upsetting. I think it could happen.
16 OT losses is pretty concerning to me when it comes to their
hot hand in the last 10. I mean, you got to respect
true.
That.
It's true. All right, Miles, is it time to get into the Western Conference? But first, should we celebrate?
I mean, I'm a bird if you're a bird.
3, 2, 1, go! Oh, that was a good one.
Crispy quacks, crispy cream. God. And we get to talk about the Western Conference, which is, I hate to sound biased, but my favorite conference.
The Superior Conference.
My favorite team plays in it, and so does your favorite team. We're actually going to be talking about your favorite team in this
I knew that was going to happen.
In this first matchup, and it is the Dallas Stars versus the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Came down to game 82 to determine the Western Conference and their destiny. The Knights, they had their destiny in their own hands. They finished 45-29-8. They lost in regulation to the Ducks, moving themselves to the central portion of the bracket as the wild card 2, matching up with the Western Conference best Dallas Stars, who are 52-21-9. That's Nolan's favorite team for those of you keeping track. The Stars come into the playoffs humming, going 8-2 to close out the year. They've been getting balanced scoring up and down the lineup. Great goaltending, solid defense, including the deadline acquisition of Chris Tanev. The defending cup champions have it tough against the Stars. This will be an incredible series. I mean, the writing's on the wall. You've got two really, really good teams. The Knights went 3-0, surprisingly, in this season series. But they played all of those three games before the new year. So I don't know how much recency bias we're going to put into that. As said in the Eastern Conference, season series don't matter. What Miles' Stars game breaker, I'm going with Jake Oettinger. Obviously a very good goalie. I've gone on the record a few times saying that he's a little bit overhyped. I think he's very good, but I don't think he's as good as people necessarily say he is. Call that a hot take, call that what you want. But either way, I think that he's going to be the X factor in this one. If he plays like he did against Calgary in that series that made him a star, pardon the pun, I think that he'll be setting up the Stars for great success on the year. He had a 2.72 goals against average and a 905 save percentage. So I don't think that I'm talking out of my ass saying that he's not maybe as great as everyone says.
You know what, man? He did not have a very good season. So I think you're perfectly well within your right to believe that he's not quite the goaltender that everybody else thinks he is. Mine is Chris Tanev. I really love that addition when it was made. I really wanted him to be an Oiler, and he is fit like a glove on this Dallas Stars squad. A lot of his underlying numbers have just increased substantially since joining the Stars. He's been everything they could want and more, but the question is, can Chris Tanev play deep into a playoff series? Because, quite frankly, he has a problem getting hurt. So, is Chris Tanev going to be around for the long haul for the Dallas Stars? And if he is this a guy that completely changes their fortunes off of the back that he does all the little things well? He blocks shots. He plays in all the defensive zone or plays in the defensive zone extremely well. He can throw the big body check. He's just a pain in the ass to play against. And this is what they traded for. This is what they made their big deadline acquisition to be. I think Chris Tanev is great, and I think he's going to go a long way in making sure Dallas can go on a long playoff run. So really like Chris Tanev, and I think he's going to be a game breaker.
That's a really good pick. Not to pump your tires too much, but yeah, I mean, especially with how physical the Vegas Golden Knights forwards are on that forecheck. Yeah, he's going to be getting abused picking up pucks. And I have a feeling that Vegas is going to be dumping it in his corner more often than not. My game breaker for Vegas is the goaltending. We saw it last year where, you know, their number one guy went down. Laurent Brossoit, up until the second round, was their playoff goalie. Got hurt against the Oilers, and that made way for Aiden Hill's great run. Obviously led to them winning a Stanley Cup. But this year, it's been a little bit of a guessing game as to whether Logan Thompson or Aiden Hill is going to show up on any given night. Neither of their numbers are particularly great. I mean, they're a 909 and a 908 respectively. So depending on which guy's in there, you're getting very similar output numbers-wise. Even to make it worse, it's a 271 and a 270 goals against average. So really pick your poison. Are the Knights going to get average goaltending, or are they going to get stud goaltending? And I think that that is going to tell you who wins this series, depending on which guy shows up in the crease.
Speaking of guys showing up, my guy is the big one. Mark Stone. It seems like he's probably playing in game one. And we are all going to be questioning how Mark Stone was able to make it back. We already are questioning whether or not Mark Stone's going to be back. But my real question regarding Mark Stone is there going to be playoff rust? Or is there going to be any sort of is he going to be able to come in and be able to play playoff hockey right away?
How quickly can he get his legs under him?
Yeah, how quickly can he adapt? That's what I was trying to say. And I just, I wonder. So, if this is fully 100% Mark Stone, then that's a true game breaker in the largest fashion. So, ultimately, I think this was a really bad matchup for Vegas. And I think this is going to be straight up stars in seven.
Yeah, dude, I think that this is unfortunately, like, Vegas is good. But yeah. Dallas is so damn deep and so good in everything they do. They're a very good hockey team, and you got to give them credit where credit's due. And that's – I'm agreeing with you, man. I think that the Pietrangelo and Stone rust is going to be something that maybe takes a game or two to shake off. I think that's going to be what does the Knights in. I have the Stars winning this one in six.
Hell yeah, you do. Love to hear that good stuff. Okay.
Next up.
Yes.
We've got the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. That's it. Back to Winnipeg is more than a quote from The Simpsons. That is something that the Avs will be saying multiple times as the Winnipeg Jets finished second in the Central with a 52-24-6 record. A team written off in the summer, called mid by the hosts of this very show and many others. But they put it together to have a great season, backstopped by the best goalie in the game and supported by the ultimate gamer up front. The Jets battled injuries to some of their top guys. They picked up some skilled players along the way and are looking to make a run this year. Standing in their way is the Colorado Avalanche, 1 year, 2 years removed from winning the Stanley Cup. The Avs finished 50-25-7, 3 points behind the Jets for third in the Central. Led by Natron McKinnon and his incredible season, this series is shaping up to be a must-watch every night. The Jets, surprisingly, swept this series 3-0, including a 7-0 win about a week ago, with the Avs stars playing in that game. So Winnipeg, man, they defied the odds and played some really, really good hockey this year, and it set them up in a position to have a home ice advantage in this series against a very, very good Avalanche team. My game breaker for the Jets, I made fun of him calling him the ultimate gamer, but really, Mark Scheifele. We've talked a lot of shit about Mark Scheifele on this show. He had a really good year this year in terms of offensive output. He played some great hockey. But if you're going to go out on the record and call yourself an absolute gamer, there's few players in the league that I would like to make you put your money where your mouth is. Playing against Nathan McKinnon every night is going to show us if Mark Scheifele's a gamer or not. And I think that it's ultimately going to come down to him if he's able to produce playing against great defensive players in Devon Taves and Cale Makar and defend against great forwards in Mikko Rantanen and Nathan McKinnon. So Mark Scheifele, it's your time to shine if you want to win one, buddy.
Miles, would you like to know Mark Scheifele's nicknames?
Shifes.
We got Shife. You're not going to guess the other three. Fifi, Bright Eyes, and the best one, Bambi.
Yeah, all of those are, like, you look, Mark Shifley has big, bright blue eyes.
Yeah, so he's beautiful. That, yeah.
He's good looking cat. Yeah, all of those nicknames make sense to me. That seems fair.
Yeah.
Bam.
Still,
yeah.
Still super lame. Nothing like dragging a guy into the bus.
Dude, gotta show up. Don't call yourself a fucking gamer and then hide when the spotlight's the brightest. If you never want to get made fun of again on One for One, Mark Shifley, because I know you're listening, this is your opportunity to do so.
Do you think he's hyping himself up before the playoff series by listening to our pods?
No, like, dude, he's definitely...
I'm not going to be like that, guys.
He's definitely a lose yourself with headphones on kind of guy.
Oh, yeah. No, he's definitely Fort Minor song. What's it called again?
Oh, Remember the Name.
Remember the Name, yeah.
Remember the Name. Yeah. That's such a good song. That had a grip on me at 11 years old.
My game breaker is the guy that's going to win the Vezina, and that's Connor Hellebuyck. He is the straw that stirs the drink that is the Winnipeg Jets. If he falls apart, this whole team falls apart. I know they have Laurent Brossoit. Do they still have Laurent? Or is he back in Vegas?
Laurent Brossoit is their backup goalie.
Okay,
confirmed.
He is. Okay. Per Darren?
Per Miles.
Per Merles? Okay.
Per Merles.
I have confirmed Per Merles that is the backup goaltender. Now, I get it, but he's nowhere near as good as Connor Hellebuyck, so you're just going to have to deal with that, Winnipeg. And if he is not his usual Connor Hellebuyck self, then the Winnipeg Jets will only go so far. I do like their depth now. I love that they have guys like Alex Iafallo up and down the lineup. Gabe Vilardi obviously had an awesome season.
Monahan to Foley.
Monahan to Foley, yeah.
Steelers.
They are
crazy,
deep.
Dude.
They are extremely deep. So I do not want to face them at all. I'm actually taking a look at what Toffoli's numbers were with the Jets. He had, he wasn't as good as I thought he was. 7 goals, 11 points in 18 games. So, but.
Well, I mean, Kyle Connor missed a big portion of this season, too. I mean, like, I feel like we're remiss if we don't talk about the Winnipeg Jets and at least mention Kyle Connor and Josh Morrissey, who, by the way, Josh Morrissey had a sneaky good year.
Yep.
Not quite as Norrissey as he was last year in the first half of the year, but I mean, guy was very good this year. And again, Kyle Connor, his numbers aren't really going to jump off the page at you because of how many games he missed with injury, but like that dude can put the puck in the net, especially playing with Shifley. They're good. They're a very, very good team. My game breaker, again, going off of how good the Jets are, how deep they are, is going to be their depth scoring. We know that Nathan MacKinnon can put 140 points in the cage. We know that Mikko Rantanen can score a shitload of goals and contribute offensively. We know Cale Makar is nasty and nice with it. But what are guys like Jonathan Drouin, I'm sorry, Casey Mittelstadt, Valerie Nichushkin, like what are these guys going to do themselves? If they're able to contribute the way that they did when the Avs won the cup, Colorado looks very good, looks very strong. But if they get shut down by the depth of the Winnipeg Jets forward group and aren't able to produce, I think it'll be a pretty quick one for them. Like I said, Winnipeg's good. Don't count them out. And that's going to force Colorado to play a lot better than they did last year against the Kraken when they lost in that first round.
Yeah, for that reason, I've got Casey Mittelstadt as my big X-factor game breaker for the Colorado Avalanche. They made a big gamble in trading Bowen Byram to the Buffalo Sabres and getting back Casey Mittelstadt. They are banking on this guy to be their proper number two center behind Nathan MacKinnon. So far, the returns are pretty mixed, but if this guy can have a huge playoff run and put together all the little pieces that make up a really foundational second line for the Avs, That's going to be huge. We talk about how good the top line is, but when they won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago, the key was their depth. Their depth, especially from that second line with Nazem Kadri, that was huge coming out of that playoff series. So I'm really interested to see how Mittelstadt adapts. And with that being said, I've got the Avalanche in six.
Well, I think you did a very good job of explaining what the Avalanche need to do to win. And I think that that is exactly why I have the Jets winning in seven. I think the Jets are deeper. I think the Jets are going to be the team that are going to be the Avs of a few years ago. And unfortunately, it's going to be 2 years in a row where Colorado doesn't make it out of the first round, in my humble opinion.
Great pick, by the way. I think this is a really good pick. I think it's very astute, Miles.
Well, thank you. And it took a lot for me to cheer for Winnipeg or put my Winnipeg foot forward. So for any Jets fans that are listening to the show, you put up with my shit long enough. I'm rooting for you this time.
Speaking of a team that you're not going to put up with their shit.
Boy, howdy. We have the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators. The Pacific Division champion Vancouver Canucks have snapped their playoff drought after a 50-23-9 season. All-star and captain defenseman Quinn Hughes was awesome for them all year, with great support from a forward group that saw numerous players play up to their potential this year. With a healthy and talented goaltender in Thatcher Demko, the Canucks are hoping to make moves this playoff season. They face off against a wild card one Nashville Predators, who were 47-30-5 on the season. Built very similar to the Canucks, they feature a great goalie, good defenseman, and forwards who played better than expected this year, highlighted by Philip Forsberg, who put up 94 points this season. In a series with a bunch of travel, I think it'll be fun to see who has the gas to make the push. Vancouver won the season series 3-0, but they played all of their games in the first 3 months of the season against the Predators, and the Predators, very famously, were an exceptional second half team.
Mm-hmm.
My Canucks game breaker is going to be Pettersson. And the reason that I'm picking him, JT Miller was this team's leading scorer. I do not think that JT Miller is this team's best forward. Yeah, and I think
correct.
That if the Canucks are going to win this series, they need their best forward, Elias Pettersson, to show up and be their best forward. And if he is, that will put the Canucks very advantageous in disposing of the Nashville Predators. He's got to show up.
Very, very stinky. No, I shouldn't say very stinky, but like really disappointing February through April numbers. Oh my God.
He was very hot to start the year and yeah, trailed off, man. Like Connor Garland, JT Miller, Brock Besser, they carried a lot of weight and took a lot of shit off of Pettersson because he was, as you said, not very good in the last couple of months for this team. Flew under the radar because of how good Quinn Hughes was. If the Canucks would have slid, he would have gotten blasted.
Yeah. 25 points in 33 games is not what you want to see from your like $12 million forward for
your cornerstone centerman.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I like the pick of Elias Pettersson. I mean, you know, they live and die by their talent. I've got the one that everyone's wondering, how is he? Is he going to have a little bit of rust on him? Can he adapt to the playoff environment? Obviously, he had a crazy playoff run a couple of years ago when they went on that miracle bubble run. Thatcher Demko, one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. Whether or not he can actually turn this into a nice long playoff, like a nice long playoff run, remains to be seen, because they did it before, but was that just a fugazi? Or are they
fugazi?
It's fairy dust. It's not even real. Sorry, I'm trying to do the Matthew McConaughey from Wolf of Wall Street thing. You know?
Yes, I actually knew that one because I'm a business grad and I've seen that movie multiple times.
Of course, Of course he had. but I mean, he's when he's on, he's one of the most dominant goaltenders in the NHL. So whether or not he is still on, it remains to be seen. Miles, who is your game breaker for the Predators?
My game breaker for the Predators, I mean, very easy to guess this one. Juuse Saros had a bit of a down year based on his numbers because he is one of the best goalies in the NHL when he's humming. And maybe he didn't have a great year this year. He was 2.86 goals against average and a 906 save percentage. Actually bested by his backup in Kevin Lankinen. So, Juuse Saros, yep. Yeah, Kevin Lankinen had better numbers, which is surprising. And Kevin Lankinen's, I'll bring it up here, I got it, in his 24 games played versus Saros' 64. So again, big difference in sample size. 2.82 and a 908. So just marginally better than Juuse Saros' numbers, which is kind of crazy. But that being said, Juuse Saros, great player, great goaltender. If he shows up, rights his wrongs, and plays the game that he's capable of, not outrageous to think that he can steal some games and win this series for the Nashville Predators.
So with that choice, I'm going to their decor. I'm going to their captain, Roman Josi. Maybe like top five hottest players in the NHL. Maybe number one.
That's probably top three.
Yeah, he's so good looking. Imagine being that good looking and being 6'1". Like,
I literally can't. I fucking can't, dude.
And being from Switzerland. Oh god, it's so cool to be Swiss. It's like cheese.
Hide my offshore money and give me a nice watch.
Speaking of Wolf of Wall Street, I mean, 85 points in 82 games this season. Guy is an absolute horse on the back end. The offense starts from somebody, and it always starts from Roman Josi. I'm very interested to see where this team is in the playoffs, because I really want to know, like, whether or not the offensive explosion from this team in the second half is real. If this is real and this is what we need to expect out of the Predators, well, that's all going to start from Roman Josi. And whether or not he can put it together and go on, I've said this before with a lot of these players, a long playoff run, it's all going to start here. It's all going to start in this series. Whether or not the Canucks' best defensive forwards can shut him down or shut down the top line of the Predators, well, I guess we're going to find out. But I've got Roman Josi as my X factor in the series. And also, helping him is the fact that he's a guy that's been in a couple playoff runs before. How many playoff games has he played? He has played 85 playoff games. Now, a lot of that is inflated due to the Stanley Cup run that they had back in the 2017 season. But still, playoff experience matters. And that is why I'm so sorry, Leach. I've got the Preds in five. I think every year we have these like surprising sort of underdog stories where these underdogs come in and they absolutely wax the crazy first place team they're playing against. I think Vancouver is a good team. I think they're a great team. But I think this team is about a season or two away from like really going on a real run. And I think the Preds and their experience and their tenacity, their coaching staff, I think this is going to go a long way. And I also just don't think Thatcher Demko is going to be ready to go. If he is, great. But I really worry about that.
The five is a hot take.
Scalding hot. I know.
And I felt bad when I did mine because, like, again, I'm really sorry, Leach. This is not an indictment on, like, your team. They had a really good season this year. I think Nashville is, like, the worst matchup that a team could get in these playoffs because, like, that month of February, they were insane. They won 16 of 19 games. They beat the Blues, the Knights, the Kings, the Wild, the Avs, the Jets, the Kraken, the Panthers, the Knights again. Like, they beat some really good teams in that run, and gave them a lot of points and a lot of swag. They slowed down a little bit in the month of March. Going into this, I think they're 4-5 and something. I don't know how to do math, but like, they're a good team. They played a lot better than people thought they would this year. And that being said, like, when they're hot, they're very good, and they got hot at the right time. That makes me scared to play against them, as any team, not Vancouver, not Dallas, not Edmonton, whomever. Like, they're good, and they've got players that are peaking at the right time, peaking at the right time as a team. And that's why I have the Preds also winning this series in seven. I'm sorry, Leach. It's not how we want to do it. We're not trying to. I'm looking forward to getting a very long text from him breaking down our analysis and saying why we're stupid. The heart wants what it wants, and the heart wants the Preds to win.
Another guy that we haven't even mentioned yet, Ryan O'Reilly. Like, Ryan O'Reilly had an awesome season. Like, that's a guy that knows how to win. Dude, he's played so many playoff games.
They're scratching Tyson Barrie.
Yeah.
They mean business, and they're making business decisions to win hockey games. You're right, Ryan O'Reilly. That's a huge piece that we forgot to mention. Down the middle of a guy that's a bitch to play against. Selke winner, like, he's nice with it, and that experience has to shine through at some point. I think you're bang on. I think Vancouver's just a little bit too premature in their rise as being a huge contender. I think they might be slightly overrated in these playoffs, and I think Nashville's gonna unfortunately show them the ropes.
Miles, I just want to quickly mention this. How many seasons of Ryan O'Reilly's career do you think he has played in a playoff game? He's been in the league since 2009.
Buffalo for so long, and shitty Colorado. I don't think he's played in that much playoffs.
He's played in the league for 15 years.
I'm going to say he's played in six playoffs, seven playoffs.
Oh, you fucking nailed it. Seven playoff runs. That's crazy.
Yeah, because he played on some shitty teams for a while, man.
So his first three seasons, okay? The first time he made the playoffs, he was 18. That was in the 2009-10 season. The next time he made the playoffs, 4 years later in the 2013-14 season, he was 22. Then didn't make the playoffs until the 2018-19 season when he was 27.
With the Blues?
Yeah, with the Blues.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But no, man, I totally agree with you. Like, they got a lot of dogs on this team.
Hungry dogs run faster. Go Birds.
Yeah. Okay. Is it time?
Hot damn. And you know what? This wasn't even game fixing. This was just how it worked out.
Oilers versus Kings.
Oilers versus Kings. The third installment of the nastiest series in the first round's recent memory. We have two teams that fucking hate each other with every fiber of their being, and two fan bases that don't like each other either. We've said it before on the show. We'll say it again. Lowest IQ hockey fans are Kings fans. I don't apologize for saying that. Two teams that fired their coaches this season. Two teams with forwards who make big money and have half of their own team hating them. I'm sure there's more comparisons that we could make, but let's get down to brass tacks. The Oilers finished second in the Pacific Division with a 49-27-6 record, highlighted by their awful start and their historic winning streak. A true Jekyll and Hyde story. The heart-winning duo of McDavid and Draisaitl led the way in scoring for this club, but the real story of the season was Zachary Martin Hyman, noted children's author, scoring 54 goals, and the breakout season of young defenseman Evan Bouchard, the Dentin daddy. We would be remiss if we did not mention Stuart Skinner's 36-win season and the exceptional play of defenseman Matthias Ekholm helped mold the Oilers into potential division winners. And then there's the LA Kings, the boys who ultimately finished third in the Pacific, going 44, 27, and 11. They were 5 points behind the Oilers. I'm from New Jersey. A team with a deep forward core and a strong defensive presence like to slow the game down with their 1-3-1 forecheck. The season series was 3 wins, 1 loss in favor of the Oilers. Will the Oilers be able to dispose of the Kings for a third straight year, or does LA finally crack the code? Nolan, my game breaker for the Oilers, you could easily say goaltending, you could easily say McDavid, you could easily say Leon Draisaitl, and I am going to say Leon Draisaitl, because he has gotten hurt against the Kings a few times. They play him really hard. Fuck their defensemen that attack him the way that they do. But with that 1-3-1 style of like trap that they play in the neutral zone, really makes carrying the puck in a lot harder. And I think that it's going to be a mental hurdle for Leon, as someone who potentially likes to maybe make an extra fancy pass when he doesn't need to, and a guy who gets a little emotional when things aren't going his way and gets frustrated. It's really going to be a tale of the series as to how he handles that adversity and how he responds to it. And if he's able to do that in a positive way and contribute the way that he can, the way that we know he can, Oilers will wax him. But if he spends too much time in his own head and spends too much time fucking around with the little shit that doesn't matter, taking dumb penalties, you know, being a Oilers power play and then him taking a slashing penalty behind the play, doing shit like that, it will be a bit of an Achilles heel. So Leon Draisaitl, he is my game breaker, my X factor for the Oilers in this series.
Yeah. So for me, I'm going to go pretty simple. The story of last season's playoffs when it started was the play of Stuart Skinner. And Stuart Skinner got a lot of shit. Stuart Skinner got a lot of shit because he just, I've made this joke before, but he turned into a Blumpkin. He didn't turn into a pumpkin. He turned into a full-blown Blumpkin. He was not good. In fact, Jack Campbell had to bail him out a couple times. And we were entering the season hoping Stuart Skinner could be the starter again. And the beginning of the season did not go according to plan for Stuart Skinner. He was not very good. He was quite bad. And he somehow willed his way back. And despite the team in front of him playing better, he himself played better as a goaltender. And he became the Oilers' number one, no question, starter going into this playoffs. My big take with this series, game one is going to tell us literally everything about this team. Because in both of the last two Jay Woodcroft playoff runs, each game one, this team is unprepared and they're not ready to go. What does this year tell us? Is this year going to show us something different? Are they going to come in, or is LA going to come into Edmonton, and is Edmonton going to lay the absolute slippers to them in the very first game? We certainly hope so, because that is what you need. You need a killer instinct against this team, because they are going to be out for blood. They're going to be out for revenge. And at the end of the day, nothing is going to bring them more happiness than to defeat the team that has killed them the last two playoff series. And Stuart Skinner is the last line of defense on this. And if he can stand up to the moment and he can be that guy the Oilers need him to be, they will go as far as Stuart Skinner takes them. And I think that he is ultimately going to be the one that leads them there. As much as I would love to pick a depth scorer, I'd love to pick someone like Evander Kane. I'd love to pick someone like even Ryan McLeod. This team will live and die by the name of Stuart Skinner. And so I think he's going to be the one to watch out for in this series.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to say I want to agree with you, and game one's going to tell us everything we know. That being said, I think of game one against the Flames, where they got waxed 9-6 and ultimately won that series. So if the Oilers lose game one, I'm not going to be sounding all the alarms crying, but game two will tell us everything we need to know about what they're made of. I don't even want to get into that right now, because what they should be doing is preparing for the LA Kings. They know their opponent quite well. Like you said, they're very familiar with one another. There's a new coach who you hope is going to learn from the mistakes of his predecessor. And in the same regard, there's a new coach in LA. I think he's going to really be looking at what Todd McLellan was doing and doing unsuccessfully against the Oilers. But at the end of the day, your talent needs to outplay the other team's talent. And I think the Oilers are more talented. We are totally not even talking about the Kings. My Kings game breaker is going to be their second defensive pairing of Gavrikov and Matt Waugh. I think that you know exactly what you're getting with Drew Doughty and Mikey Anderson, but that Gavrikov and Matt Waugh pairing needs to play good, if not great, if LA is going to have a chance, because Edmonton's a lot deeper than they've been in previous years in their forward group. And you can't hide behind your two big workhorses. You have to show up and you have to play great if you're going to slow down the Edmonton Oilers forward group. So if that D pairing plays well, it'll be a long series. If they play poor, I think it'll be a shorter one.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Matt Roy.
Is it Roy? Kidding. It's not even Waugh?
It's not even Waugh. He's American.
Oh, fuck. I just gave him the benefit of the doubt. It's the last time I give any king a benefit of the doubt.
And the French. Speaking of French, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt. Nice segue, hey? There you go. My game breaker for the Kings is a little guy by the name of Pierre-Luc Dubois.
D-L-B.
Pierre-Luc Dubois has not had a very nice start to his Kings tenure, needless to say. Finished with, I'm about to pull this up. Why did I not pull this up before? I don't know. That was a bad idea. But Pierre-Luc Dubois finished with, 40 points in 82 games this season. Yeah.
For $8.5 million.
After they traded all that shit for him too. Yikes. Pierre-Luc Dubois has, I think, played well in previous playoff runs. Last time, he's got his career. He's got 26 points in 38 playoff games. That's okay, I guess. He was good in the series against the Leafs where the Jackets beat them. But this guy can make his $8.5 million contract worth it if he shows up for the playoffs. If he becomes a completely different player in the playoffs, this is the same sort of mindset I have with someone like Connor Brown, where he only scored like 2 goals going into the end of the regular season. But if you score at a crazy pace in the playoffs and it leads you to a Stanley Cup, it's okay. It's fine. All is forgiven. Nobody cares.
Connor Brown had at least 4. Sorry.
Yeah. Connor Brown will be scoring at least 14 in the playoffs this year. That's my hot goal take. For
little under a goal per game in the playoffs. It would be rock star.
He's going to go on like an Evander Kane run from the previous year. Then yeah. Imagine he chucks up the 7 to somebody.
Oh,
Connor
dude,
Brown. The most swag possible. By the way, Miles, I know you said we've been barely talking about the Kings. Guess what? We're a fucking Oilers podcast. Suck it, Kings fans. We're going to talk about our boys in blue and orange all day, okay? But I just gave props to one of your guys. Pierre-Luc Dubois could maybe be something. He could maybe be pretty good. But
the fucking sun might go behind the moon too, but it doesn't happen very often.
But guess what? For a week, it happened.
Yeah, whatever.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to. I don't want to speak bad juju. I don't want to be.
Neither do I.
You know, anything of that sort. Yeah. Did I cut you off? Or are you still talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois?
I was gonna say another thing I find really funny on Hockey Reference is they have the pronunciation, and it says in capital letters P E E, and then A-I-H-R, and then L-E-W-K, and then it's D-O-O, yeah. and then in capitals, B-W-A, Bois.
Bois.
Yeah, so I thought that was
Luc Dubois.
Dubois. Thought that was pretty funny.
Pierre Luc Dubas.
With Pierre Luc Dubas. It's like the like Moncton version of Kyle Dubas.
Oh, you're from Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'll be honest. I'm acting pretty fine. I'm not. I'm scared. I'm definitely really scared for the series. I don't want the series to happen. It's terrifying to me because I don't know. You can flip a coin so many times, and you can hope that it's gonna. It might hit heads twice, but the odds it hits it three times in a row is not great. So it does concern me a little bit. I like the matchup for the Oilers, but I'm not at all writing this off as like a layup, like some people are. It's kind of insane that people are.
No, you absolutely have to give LA their credit. Yeah. They're a good team. They are. They have some guys that are still on this team from their, you know, two Stanley Cups. Kempe, Fiala, Trevor Moore's been nuts this year. Like, they're finding Quinton Byfield's played up to, you know, potential, right? He had 20 goals this season. That being said, you know, they've got guys that are really good and they've got guys that have not pulled their weight this year. But at the end of the day, they are a deeper team than people give them credit for. And the Oilers are going to have to show up, man. They're going to have to show up for 60 minutes. They can't get away with any of this 40-minute bullshit. They have to play three solid periods every single time they step out against them. And I understand the probability argument. I've made it myself on the show before too. But at the end of the day, skill wins out. And this Edmonton Oilers team is deeper than we've seen them before. They're more skilled than we've seen them before. They are well coached. They're well prepared. And that is why I am predicting that the Oilers win this series in six games.
I also have the Oilers in six games.
Cool.
yeah, I think I don't want to sort of put the what's the term, the pull before the skis, is that what it is?
Horse before the cart.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Cart before the horse. I don't know, fuck whatever.
But I really like how this team is built for a long playoff run. I know that I've had my gripes with how it's been built and with how the lack of activity at the trade deadline has really bothered me, but at this point, I'm banking on a fresh season. This is a fresh new it's a fresh new stat sheet for a lot of these guys. Yeah. Connor Brown, Adam Henrique, Evander Kane. We can all start from scratch, and this could really be the start of something.
Even guys like Darnell Nurse, who obviously hear the chatter that's said about him and what guys with a podcast and a couple beers in them are going to say about them. But it, like you said, man, it's their opportunity to write their own destiny. If this series ended in five games for the Oilers, I wouldn't be surprised. If this game went to seven and I was biting a belt and crying with my head between my knees, I wouldn't be surprised either, because we've gone that route with the Kings before. They've done seven, they've done six. And you know what? At the end of the day, this is a damn good playoff matchup, and this is going to be a really entertaining series, and I'm very, very excited to watch it.
I don't want to hear that stupid fucking horn. Oh, my God. Well, that about covers the playoff matchups, Miles.
It does. We've made our picks. We've said some players. We've talked some nonsense. But at the end of the day, next week shapes up in a big way. The Oilers, after a big week of games, get a nice rest because game one is in Edmonton on April 22nd. That's a Monday. Game two is in Edmonton on April 24th. Game three, they head to LA on April 26th. Game four, also in Los Angeles, on April 28th. Game five, if necessary, in Edmonton on May 1st. Game six, if necessary, in LA on May 3rd, and game seven, if necessary, in Edmonton on May 5th. Cool.
Cool, cool.
Cool, cool, cool.
Like I said, I think game one is going to tell us a lot about this team, how prepared they are, how ready to go, how serious they are about this. It's all most of those questions I firmly believe will be answered by the end of game one. So
we haven't done predictions since like the second week of the show.
Oh my God, I don't know if I can.
And this almost feels like a prediction, so I am going to ask that you find some wood beside you and just give it a quick knock. A quick knock blah.
Okay.
And we're gonna exercise our demons, man. It's gonna be a great series. I had a lot of fun with this episode. I think we talked about some fun things, some good hockey talk, and I'm looking forward to hearing what people have to say about it and seeing some people that listen to the show's brackets and having some pissed off fans that listen to the show tell us that like you suck with talking about the Caps and your take on the Canucks is going to age like sour milk. You're not giving any sort of respect to Vegas, all that sort of stuff. I'm looking forward to it because at the end of the day, this is the One for One podcast, home of hot takes and even hotter listeners. Thank you for joining us for our season 4, episode 21 playoff preview. We love you. We love hockey. And we love the Oilers. Go, Oilers, go.
Go, Oilers, go.